Don Machholtz, and you are listening to Looking Up with Don. This is the Looking Up with Don podcast, episode number 20 for the week of May 20, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmachholtz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com. Two H's. What's up in the sky this week? As our week begins on Wednesday, May 20th, the moon is nearly in the new phase and it's difficult to see in the morning sky. New moon is going to be May 22nd. In the nights following, we can find a crescent moon in our evening sky. In podcast 16, I discussed the exercise of finding the very thin lunar crescent, and that week I found it when it was 24 hours, 10 minutes old. Certainly not a record. I wasn't going for a record, but it is a good exercise in locating low-contrast objects in the twilight sky. Get good at that, and Comet Swan this week and other comets in the future become easier for you to see and appreciate. With the moon south of the ecliptic and the tilt of the morning ecliptic favoring the southern hemisphere, this week, May 21st and May 22nd, would be a good time to try to pick up the very slim crescent moon in the morning sky. This is known as the old moon. Northern hemispheres are at a disadvantage this time. What is the situation after new moon on May 22nd at 1738 Universal Time? How about trying to spot the slim crescent moon in the evening sky after May 22nd? Give it the old try, but the best latitude for seeing this is just a little bit north of the equator. As the hours pass, it becomes easier to see the crescent moon. Note that the moon will pass 4.1 degrees south of Venus on May 24th at about 0300 hours universal time, when the moon is about 34 hours old. In the Western Hemisphere, that is on the evening of Saturday, May 23rd. Try to see the crescent moon after spotting the crescent of Venus. The moon will be 4 degrees south of Venus. The moon then passes 3.6 degrees south of the planet Mercury 6.5 hours later on May 24th, 0930 hours universal time. Mercury will be 4 degrees above Venus at that time. Venus is leaving the evening sky as it will soon be passing between the Sun and the Earth. It is presently 29 million miles from us and will be a couple million miles closer on June 3rd when it passes just north of the Sun. We get a special treat this week as on Thursday, May 21st, Venus and Mercury will be within a degree of each other. Mercury does not get far from the Sun as seen from the Earth and conjunctions, that is a close passage, between Mercury and Venus are not uncommon. It's just that most of them occur when both are close to the Sun as seen from the Earth. This one is 18 degrees away from the Sun. Next year on May 28th, in the morning sky, both planets are in conjunction 16 degrees from the Sun in the morning sky. So early this week, we can see Mercury south of Venus, with Venus being about 20 times brighter than Mercury. This is best seen in binoculars and a telescope, but trying to see both of them with the unaided eye too. Venus north, Mercury south. Mercury is minus 0.6 magnitude, and it's the only bright object besides Venus in the area. During these nights, Mercury is going up compared to Venus's position. So in the days before May 21st, Mercury will be below and to the left of Venus. After May 21st, Mercury is above and to the left of Venus. Here's an illustration to help us understand our place in our galaxy known as the Milky Way Galaxy. Imagine having a round swimming pool in your backyard, 30 feet, that is about 10 meters across, and 3 feet or 1 meter deep, filled with water. You go into the water and sit at the bottom of the pool about halfway between the center and the edge. And in this case, the water's not clear. It's a bit cloudy. With each direction you look, you're looking through various amounts of water, looking toward the center or around toward the edge. You're looking through the greatest amount of water. What if you look up or down? Now you're looking through very little water, and you can see things beyond the pool. Okay, everybody out of the pool now. That is what we get with the Milky Way. That band of stars and dust we sometimes see in the sky is us, looking through the edges of the pool. When we look up or down, we are looking through the least amount of our galaxy, and we can better see things outside of our galaxy. Where has the Milky Way gone? I mean, my neighbor goes out these evenings and he can't find the Milky Way, and neither can I. What I mean by the Milky Way is seeing the thick portions of the stars, dust, and gas of our own galaxy, which is called the Milky Way. Now, that is not happening in the South Hemisphere, at least not until the end of the year. At the end of the year, the Southern Hemisphere will be faced with the same problem in the evenings, that they will not be able to find the Milky Way. As the Earth goes around the Sun, we see a slightly different background nightly. At this point in our orbit, in the Northern Hemisphere, the Milky Way hugs the horizon, all around the horizon in all directions. When you look straight up, we're looking through the thinnest part of our galaxy, and our stars, dust, and gas does not get in the way. Therefore, we can see the many galaxies far beyond our own, in the constellation Leo, and north through the Big Dipper. The springtime evening sky is best known for seeing these galaxies. Do you want to see the Milky Way? Then wait until midnight, and you'll see it rising in your northern sky. By dawn, the summer Milky Way will be drawn across your sky. Or you could wait a couple months, and at evening twilight, the Milky Way will be easily visible. The International Space Station will not be seen by as many people this coming week. North of about 30 degrees north, it is visible in both the morning and evening sky for the first part of the week, which begins May 20th, and then only in the evening sky. So Scotland, Finland, France, Belgium, you'll be able to see it in your evening sky all week long. Between 30 and 10 degrees north, nothing. Egypt, Mexico, take a break from the ISS this week. South of the equator, it is visible in your morning sky for the first part of the week, and then it won't be visible at all. That is Colombia, Brazil, Argentina. It's out in the morning sky. The more south you are, the longer into the week it will be in our morning sky before disappearing. To determine where it will be in your sky, you can go to the website heavens-above.com and enter your location, then click on ISS for International Space Station. You can also use this website, heavens-above.com, to learn about hundreds of other satellites in the sky, along with comets and where the planets are. Now for the comets that we can see this week. Use Podcast 20, Maps 2, 3, and 4, free from my website, to locate the four comets in our northern evening and morning skies. The tick marks are for 0 hours universal time. For those who want the coordinates for these four comets, download podcast 19, Comet Positions. You can find it on my website. Now, this was last week's podcast, podcast 19, and the paper is called Comet Positions. Comet Swan, C2020F8, continues to be our brightest comet. It's hovering at about magnitude 6. This is the week it reaches perihelion, its closest point to the sun, and theoretically it should reach peak brightness. We'll see. Maps 2 and 3 show Comet Swan. Map 2 is for the morning sky, when it will be in your northeastern sky at about dawn. Around May 20th, depending upon your latitude, the comet has its earliest rising time, about a half an hour before astronomical twilight. That would be about the best time to see it. The comet stops heading north and starts heading east because it will be passing north of the sun into the evening sky. See map 3 showing Comet Swan in the evening sky in the northwest. It has its latest setting time about June 1st. That will be when it will be highest in the sky after sunset. After that, it will be more difficult to see in the evening sky. With this comet, we are still fighting both the low altitude of the comet and twilight. The higher it gets in the sky, the more twilight in the sky. We just can't help it. That is the geometry of the Earth, Sun, and comet. With this being probably the brightest comet of the year, make the most of the opportunity to get out and see this. The moon will be out of the morning sky while Comet Swan is in the morning sky. When the comet gets into our evening sky, technically on about May 26, the moon will be in our evening sky too, reaching first quarter on May 29th. So my suggestion is to get out and see this comet as often as you can for the next 2 weeks. If your northeastern horizon is low, your best views would be in the mornings. If your northwestern horizon is low, then the evenings would be good. Use binoculars or a telescope and find the location from the star maps or my comet position handout. Even at 6 magnitude, low in the sky and at twilight, it may not seem very bright. Perhaps the best views of this comet have already taken place. When it was in the southern hemisphere a month ago, seen against dark sky, fighting the low altitude and the twilight tends to soften the brightness of the comet and make it less visible. But if you do get a look at it, does it show any color? And does it have one tail or even two tails? When it's gone, it's gone. Comet Atlas, C2019Y4, and Comet Swan will be within 5 degrees of each other on May 22nd. This Atlas comet is now the faintest of the four comets I'm discussing this week. It fractured and has not fully recovered. Comets normally do not recover after fracturing or splitting. This one did better than most, with some of the fragments rebrightening after splitting. Give it a try, but it is around magnitude 11, dimming by the day and close to the sun as seen from the Earth. Again, we're fighting low altitude and twilight. Podcast 20, Map 2, shows Comet 2019Y4 Atlas in the morning sky, and Map 3 shows it in the evening sky along with Comet Swan. It passes west of the sun. Remember, Comet Swan passes north of the sun at the same time. Quite a dance by these two comets. Here's a swan song for Comet Atlas. There once was a comet named Atlas, whose magnitude curve showed flatness. It fragmented and scattered, at the time it most mattered, and sank like the city of Atlantis. The other Atlas comet, 2019 Y1, is in our evening sky, and it goes through the bowl of the Big Dipper this week. It's about magnitude 10. This is nearly the same path that the other comet Atlas, 2019 Y4, took a few months ago. But that comet was going in the opposite direction. The path for this comet, 2019 Y1 Atlas, is shown on Podcast 20, Map 4, that you can get for free from my website. That same map also shows comet C2017T2 Pan-STARRS, which is following comet Atlas toward the bowl of the Big Dipper. On May 23rd, comet Pan-STARRS is within a couple degrees and north of M81 and M82, which are two galaxies. It's about magnitude 9 or 9.5 at this time. Our new constellation for this week is Boötes. This is a northern constellation, which appears in our evening sky in the springtime and hangs out through summer. It is identified on Podcast 20, Map 1. It's supposed to be a herdsman or a plowman, but everyone whom I've talked to has described it as looking like a kite. Okay, it has two tails. Some kites do get over it. The brightest star in Boötes is Arcturus at the base of the kite, and this star is the brightest star in the northern hemisphere. The constellation is easy to find, especially if you use the map. However, an old axiom is that you can use the Big Dipper to find the star Arcturus. Follow the handle of the Big Dipper, which is made of three stars, and follow the arc to Arcturus. In fact, as you visually take that path, you'll be tracing out a few stars in Boötes before you get to Arcturus. There are some faint galaxies and a few globular clusters in Boötes, most notably M3. So take the time to learn Boötes this week. For binoculars and for telescopes, our challenge this week will be observing two galaxies, M81 and M82. These galaxies are far north, north of the Big Dipper, and they are identified on Podcast 20, Map 1, and in more detail on Map 4. This week, comet Pan-STARRS will be passing just north of them. Let's start with M81. This is a spiral galaxy of magnitude 7.3, and it measures 12 by 5 arc minutes in size for the brighter inner portion, with the fainter arms extending beyond that. It is, in reality, about half the size of our Milky Way galaxy, and it's fairly close, about 12 million light years away. This is a great galaxy to show its star parties. It shows very well. It was discovered by Johann Bold in 1779, before Messier saw it, and it is sometimes referred to as Boyd's Galaxy. M82 is a galaxy, but it's not a spiral one. It is a starburst galaxy. It's also about 12 million light years away. M82 is magnitude 8.3, and it's smaller in size, 9 by 2 arc minutes. It is sometimes referred to as the cigar galaxy. This galaxy has a very energized center, perhaps caused by an interaction with M81, which is 40 arc minutes or less than a degree to the south. In the center of this galaxy, many new stars are being born. Through binoculars under dark sky conditions, both galaxies should be visible, and the shape should also be apparent. Our telescopic challenge is to view these two galaxies, and you'll notice they're very spectacular through a telescope. After viewing each one with low magnification, increase to 100 power or more. See if you can pull out any detail from the center of each of these two fine galaxies. And this week, comet Pan-STARRS is slowly moving from north of the galaxies to west of the galaxies, and is about a magnitude to two magnitudes fainter than the galaxies. As we approach summer in the Northern Hemisphere, this is normally the time that more and more star parties are being held. Due to the coronavirus and less socializing, voluntary or mandatory, many star parties have been canceled. But there's one star party that has been canceled and will never occur again. That is the Riverside Telescope Makers Conference, which is also known as RTMC. RTMC was founded by Cliff Holmes in 1969 and it ran for 51 years. Late last year, it was announced that that was the last year and the RTMC was retired. It had been held on Memorial Day weekend most of these past 50 years. RTMC began as a showcase and exchange of ideas for making telescopes and evolved to a major star party and conference and even sprouted an astro-imaging workshop that preceded it by a couple days. For most of the years, it was held at a YMCA camp called Camp Oaks near Big Bear in the mountains east of Los Angeles. At its peak, it attracted more than 2,000 attendees, many coming up from the Los Angeles area for a day or two. Meals were served, bunkhouses were reserved, guest speakers were unnerved, and the sky was observed. I first attended RTMC in 1982 when my wife Laura said to me, "Why don't you socialize more with other astronomers? Is there any event coming up where a lot of astronomers gather?" I was busy earning a living doing my comet hunting program, developing the Messier Marathon, and was content with the way things were going. It was at her urging that I attended the RTMC in 1982. And it was not an easy trip. 10 hours of driving from northern to southern California in a pickup truck with no air conditioning, driving down Highway 5, leaving San Jose at 2 a.m., then driving back on Monday, all day Memorial Day, heavy traffic after observing most of the night before, getting home around 6 p.m. and going to work the next day. In 1982, I took my 10-inch reflector on a pipe mount. It was an alt azimuth setup, and I spent 9 hours comet hunting there. I received the Warren Estes Award for creativity for designing and building the telescope. I also attended in 1985 when I discovered a comet from there, and I will discuss that at a later podcast. I also gave a talk that year on telescopes used by amateurs to discover comets. Then in 1986, I attended and talked about my discovery of my third comet, periodic comet Mach-Holtz 1, also now known as 96P. In 1987, I went back and I met Dr. Marsden there, and in 1994, I lectured on comet hunting. I attended the 50th RTMC in 2018 and gave a talk about my discovery of the comet there in 1985. Over the decades, I've heard a lot of talks there, and I've learned a lot. There is a plaque on site at Camp Oaks remembering my discovery of the comet in 1985. David Levy suggested it, and the RTMC committee carried it out. Perhaps that plaque and an observatory are all that remains from the Riverside Telescope Makers Conference. And a lot of memories. I met many astronomers of all ages and disciplines and from around the world at the Riverside Telescope Makers Conference. I have many fond memories. You have been listening to Looking Up with Don, podcast episode 20 for May 20th, 2020. Once again, the related website for this podcast is donmachholtz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com. Two H's. God willing and pod willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We will discuss what's going on in the sky, another update on Comet Swan. I'll discuss one of the oddest and yet most popular stars in the sky. And because some of you have asked, I'll explain how I designed and built my homemade 5-inch binoculars. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week. I'll see you next week.